This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Macca, it is Super Saturday. There are five by-elections taking place today. What is your prediction?
Okay.
What do you think will be the outcome?
The two in WA, Labor will retain those seats. Braddon in Tasmania, I suspect Labor will hold that.
Longford in Queensland?
Longman. Look, I think that's going to be a particularly interesting one. One Nation are going to preference the Liberal candidate. Bear in mind, 40% of One Nation voters don't follow the How to Vote card. Their preferences tend to be all over the place.
According to an article I read this morning on The Conversation, 100% of One Nation voting patterns have been with the government. 100%.
Yeah. Well, there's actually less than that because there is actually a couple of times when Pauline and her other senator, because she's lost three or four along the way, weren't in the chamber. You know, she was doing some personal grooming or something.
I understand that, but according to this article, on every occasion have voted with the Libs.
Yeah. So I think that will be interesting. I would suggest that Labor, if you're a betting person, I wouldn't be putting your Channel 9 shares on the table on that. Mayo.
So the Mayo's an interesting one.
So Rebecca Sharkey, who was the Nick Xenophon party and is now an independent. She's up against Georgina Downer, daughter of Alexander Downer, granddaughter of another Downer and great-great-granddaughter of another Downer. Bit of a downer, isn't it? not looking good for her on the polls. Independents often...
Do you think they've just given her a bad seat, Macca? Or is it her herself?
Look, I think it's a combination...
Or is there something about Downs?
I think it's something about that, you know, she's born and bred in South Australia but hasn't lived there for a while. I think Rebecca Sharkey has worked the electorate pretty hard. People can become a bit cynical. Every photo opportunity, submarines, I'll just get a picture of Georgina Downer. Actually, pity there isn't a picture of her with a phone tower because then Tim Smith would know there's phone coverage in the Adelaide Hills. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, but I'd probably put a handful of Fairfax shares on Rebecca Sharkey winning that seat.
Well, all the polls are suggesting that she will win that.
Of course.
You know. The only two that are really a real contest, from what I can see, are the Tasmanian and the Queensland seats.
Yeah. Braddon, a bit more of a harder one. Tasmania's pretty hard to call. All politics is local everywhere, but particularly in Tasmania. It will be interesting to see, because the candidate down there, Liberal candidate, is Brett Whiteley, not the dead one. but, you know, there's probably a bit of name recognition.
I would have actually said the artist rather than
the late departed artist. But I think it'll be... I suspect Labor will hold that. Tasmanians are pretty engaged with their politics, pretty engaged, as are the people of Mayo. Now, Longman, of course, the Liberal candidate, Big Trev, some pretty interesting campaigns. I don't know whether you saw some of the footage during the week of Malcolm and Big Trev visiting a pub, a beer garden to, you know, engage with some voters.
And Turnbull got attacked.
And he got into a pointing, you know, finger-pointing context with a mature lady who, you know, about said that you'd cut penalty rates. Oh, no, I didn't cut penalty rates. It was the Fair Work Commission. Yeah, well, you actually allowed it to happen. And then he launched into this thing that Bill Shorten... Where's Bill Shorten today? He's missing in action. Anyway, he got a reaction that he didn't expect. Then some other people bought into it. So I bet he was wishing he hadn't done it. But watching his body language, Malcolm's body language there, he was pretty uncomfortable. He was pretty uncomfortable. But he was lecturing this woman, you know, and pointing. You know, the Twitter spheres had a lot of fun with it.
It'll be all very interesting. I suspect that we will know pretty much by the end of the evening what the outcome of all of those...
Oh, now, Lee Lin Chin leaving SBS, Tass.
Yeah, it's a sad day.
I don't know. There was a really wonderful tweet. The Queensland Police Service said they were sorry to see her go, but that the applications for a media officer for the Queensland Police Service had closed, but perhaps they could consider her for future positions. And her response was, "Do I get a gun?" I wonder where she's going to turn up. But also, where is Micah Bede, the CEO of SBS? Where is he going to turn up?
Yes, do you have any insights into that, Macca?
Oh, I don't think it'll be in media. I think it'll be in a more in a different area of the business world. Not that I'd know.
I suspect you might.
You never know. Some people said, "Oh, they think he's going to Channel 9." No. What's that old saying? A dog doesn't return to its vomit.
Something like that.
Yeah. yes. Do you know that Neil Mitchell likes Lamingtons?
Well, yeah. I love Lamington myself, actually, especially with cream and jam in
but
them.
But do you like the pink ones, or are you a traditionalist?
No,
you're a traditionalist.
No. With the cream and jam, thank
Greeks
you.
Do Greeks do Lamingtons?
No.
Why not?
No. Well, there might be a variation of them. I've got no idea. But, look, I'm strictly into balaclava myself.
What, wearing one or going there?
I'm not really into cakes, but I do love a good piece of baklava.
Oh, yes. Who doesn't? Bit of baklava.
Speaking of my people, Macca, we've had a message from 317.
But your people, you're not Greek.
Oh, that's what I forgot. But we've had a lovely message from 317 who says that their heart goes out to the people of Greece. And I think there wouldn't be a single person in our nation who wouldn't feel that way as well, especially given the experience that we had back here in 2009 with the Black Saturday fires.
Yeah.
That was a horrible day.
I remember that day.
What were you doing?
For a couple of reasons. I remember standing in the backyard in my house. We won't say where it is because I don't want a posse to gather out the front. Looking at the sky and the colour of the sky that day, and that was the day that Jonathan was coming back from the UK.
Oh, was it?
Yes. So that was however many years ago that was.
God, he came back with a storm, didn't he?
He did, yeah. But I remember that day, and the colour of the sky was an extraordinarily hot day and, you know, windy, awful. You know,
well, I recall that day because my friends Peter and John were down from Byron Bay.
Yeah.
Or maybe they were in Sydney at the time, and we attended Maria and Bruce's wedding. What a day to have a wedding.
Yeah.
And I remember poor Bruce in this church in Kew somewhere looking like a dishcloth. The poor
fellow.
A
dishcloth?
Yes, he was just sweating like you'd never believe.
Like a wet sock puppet.
Yeah, but I felt like taking his jacket off. And,
I bet you did.
Well, we... Well, he did take his jacket off and his shirt just stuck to his body. It was, and the other funny thing was that his or hers, I can't recall, but one of their relatives was there from Ireland. And, of course, they had an experience.
No.
You know, hot weather, let alone warm weather. And that poor family looked like they were physically distressed. They were not coping.
Mm.
Not coping.
Perhaps it was because Bruce had his jacket off. That might have been it.
Anyway, 80 or so people dead around Athens. The toll is still increasing. It's had a devastating impact on a nation that's already been impacted economically.
Now, Paul, who's back on panel for us, and Dylan very graciously filled in for 3 weeks. Thank you, Dylan.
He did too. And welcome back, Paul.
And Fiona, our producer, is she's out and about today working on Melbourne Open House.
Yes.
Such a great event. I reckon it's got huge traction this year.
Well, we had Emma, who's the organiser of Open House here not too long ago.
And so Ben is doing our tweets today. Now, both Paul and Ben have just got back from... the UK, from the United Kingdom. tell us quickly, guys, where did you go and what did you do? No, don't point at him, Ben. You have to say something too.
So we've had a great time, Macca. You know, they say it's cold up there in the Northern Hemisphere.
Brexit.
We didn't have a day under 26 degrees. So that was great. But you're right, Brexit is a hot topic.
Yeah.
There's a nightmare scenario occurring.
So how's Theresa May not going?
Well, there's no credible alternative at the moment because they're all a bunch of Muppets.
Sock puppets.
Yeah, seriously, there is no great credible alternative. They're heading for...
A hard Brexit.
Oh, a hard Brexit with nothing. The European Union are fed up to the back teeth without any credible plan. The Leavers never put forward a credible plan. There wasn't a plan when the vote was taken. And now they're left in this limbo land where they can't agree anything and in their own party, let alone with the EU.
So what's going to happen in Ireland? Because, you know, the small party, the Ulster Unionists, which are supporting Theresa may or may not, more may not, in the Parliament, they don't want a hard border.
Yeah, well,
but the EU are sort of saying, well, how can you not have a hard border?
And the EU have just knocked back the British proposal to collect customs and duties and manage a border on the EU's behalf. And that was a centrepiece of Theresa May's negotiating platform.
Theresa May not's
negotiating platform. Chief sock puppeteer that she is. And so this is, you know, this is going to be a real thorn in the side. I mean, the negotiations are then over before they start it. It will be a problem in Northern Ireland. They need to have an open border there. It's underlined the peace process for the last 40 years. It simply shouldn't be on the table.
Do you really? I mean, okay. There's still it's March next year that they will fall out of the EU effectively. If they, you know, there will be a hard Brexit.
They're going to come tumbling from a massive height.
Yeah,
out.
But you know,
how do you guys feel about that?
Devastated,
livid, actually, seriously livid. What a bunch of Muppets that they give such an important decision without giving everyone the proper facts, and no one in that whole debate leading up to the referendum stopped to say we have got to restart the discussions and give everyone the right knowledge so they make an informed decision.
There's a lesson here for Australia as well about pandering to far right-wing parties, One Nation included, and legitimate right-of-centre parties thinking that they're losing some of their base to these nutjobs on the extreme without UKIP.
But Ben, isn't there also a very strong view that the majority of people didn't actually engage with the discussion and couldn't even be bothered voting?
Yes.
Predominantly younger people, and they're the ones who are now very angry about this?
That's exactly right. That's another lesson for every democratic, you know, every democracy in the world that you've got.
Take responsibility. Engage.
Definitely. That's why I think Australia is a model to have compulsory voting. You have to take responsibility there. You have to participate. Even if that means turning up and wasting the vote, you have to engage and you have to go.
Can I ask, guys, your parents' view on Brexit?
That's a really good question. So I had two parents. One voted one way, one voted the other.
Okay.
Ridiculously, even though I begged them to try and look at the facts. And now regret it. Because felt they were led up the garden path without the right information. So, you know, it's genuinely that people didn't feel they had the right information to vote. And now I think if there was a second referendum, which has been discussed there, they are talking about it. I'm not sure it can change anything. I think the damage has already been done. But I think people genuinely now feel very annoyed that they're going to come to a situation that is just not recoverable.
And Ben?
Yes, my parents also voted separate ways, which was led to some interesting discussions. I think when I was just with them, they were almost tired of talking about it. They know I'm disappointed with one of them, Dad. But it's you know.
Has he changed his view?
Not so much. I don't think so. I think some of the reasons he voted that way still stand.
And what were those? You know, just generally. You know, without putting your dad in the gun sights, but what were the reasons that, you know, you guys think that, you know, a lot of people, particularly older people, voted to exit? What do you think it was?
I think there's a feeling that this isn't the EU that was voted for when the UK elected to join.
But that was under Ted Heath.
Yes. And it was, you know, very much considered a trading bloc. And now, you know, ever stronger union, ever closer integration has meant some people have become uncomfortable about losing identity to a European superstate. But that's not the
plan.
Well,
some might say it gives Britain a place in Europe.
I definitely agree. I think
and some influence as opposed to, okay, well, you know, Theresa May not and Donald Trump might hold hands, but at the end of the day, regrettably, Britain is not a world power, but as part of the, you know, for the British, as part of the EU, they did have significant power.
Yes, and I think Britain will risk sliding into some, you know, geopolitical irrelevance because of this decision.
And that's the worst possible scenario, Macca, because they'll come to some solution. That they're bound to find something that works for both parties. But if Britain does have any small part in the EU machine, it'll have absolutely no influence around the negotiating table, no legal representation. So they'll have to accept what they're given.
Now, I'm not going to name the brand, but there is an automotive brand that manufactures in the UK, and let's not mention them, but they are seriously, seriously considering moving their manufacturing out of the UK into Europe simply because they don't believe that no matter what agreements Britain might reach with other countries, they won't have the level playing field, all things being relative, that they do as a member of the EU. And that is a significant amount of jobs. Very well-known brand. But they're not the only ones. Financial services industry.
Well, that's a really
of
good...
Of all places, most of it's going to go to Paris.
That's a really good segue, Macca, into the question that I wanted to ask the boys. What practical difference, what will be different for ordinary Brits in their everyday, day-to-day life after Brexit? What will change?
So... functionally, it should make no difference. Anyone who is already there will be given indefinite leave to remain. But I think that there are some surprising risks emerging at the moment, which no one really anticipated. The NHS is stockpiling certain drugs because of concerns about availability and supply chain, as when Britain tumbles out of the EU without a deal on managing standards in medicines and patent law.
So they may run out of drugs, is that what you're saying?
That's a concern.
Or they become non-conforming with the law. Or
they have to pay more because they no longer have the same bargaining power. But just explore that a bit further. What else will be different?
So I don't think anyone's probably realised about the influence of the financial services in terms of keeping the economy fairly buoyant. And once that transfers, which the view is probably going to go to Frankfurt.
Frankfurt and Paris.
Paris, yeah.
I mean, the French are really good at that.
So what that means
stuff.
Is jobs.
It means jobs and it means investment. And it also means the fact the economy is probably going to slow down by a good 2-3%. Mm. And that'll start them into a recession cycle unless the government can pump lots of money in.
Which is going to be difficult because... they're already running a huge deficit.
Exactly. So that's the issue they've got, is that they're not going to be able to afford to keep the economy afloat just by pumping in more cash without racking up even bigger debts, and they can't afford to pay.
So the tangible difference for everyday Brits will be less jobs, probably a bit of difficulty in accessing some goods, like some medicines. Perhaps the price will go up. What else?
Travel will become more difficult because they'll make sure the borders are harder. So just jumping from one country to the next.
Okay, so they'll have to show their passport like the rest of us do.
They'll have to line up with us at the non-EU queue.
Yeah. What else?
The EU has every right to make an example of Britain because the
and they will do that, no doubt.
I think so.
But I'm seriously trying to understand what difference this will make to everybody's day-to-day life.
I can only see downsides.
Living standards will fall. Living standards will fall in the short to medium term, and people will have to start paying high prices for goods and services, and there will be less disposable income, and there'll be a squeeze. And I think that's really going to hit people where they didn't expect that type of thing was going to happen quite so quickly.
And as always, the poorest will be hit hardest. Yeah. The two of the most impoverished regions of the UK, one of which I'm from, receives money directly from the EU for infrastructure investment, and that will be cut off. The expectation is the government in Westminster Spencer will replace that, but with what money? Similarly, farmers, we have the common agricultural policy in the EU, which I hate, takes up about 40% of the EU budget, but it keeps the land managed and keeps food security in place, and farmers receive subsidies in order to continue working. That will stop. And again, expectation is Westminster should be backing that up. I just don't see where Theresa May not will find all this extra money. Maybe Mr. Trump can write her a nice big comedy check.
Yeah. Well, he likes writing checks to women.
Where do you think... where do you boys think this is going to land? If you were to put on your, pull out your magic-looking glass, where do you think this is going to land?
I think that there will come to some arrangement. It'll be very 11th hour. Britain will hang on by a thread as some part of the EU, but with absolutely no rights and no influence. I think it is going to be the worst of all possible. It's going to be a hard exit without much in it.
Ben, where do you think it'll land?
I agree. I think there's a potential for a second vote. And if not, I think we'll end up with the Norwegian-style arrangement, paying for the EU but with no influence.
And, of course, you know, one listener has said that one of the, you know, the big factors in people's decision was their thoughts or their views on free borders, of which England was part of, so immigration into the UK. Now, I saw a figure, is it 13 or 14% of the workers in the National Health Service are not Brits? They're from the EU.
That would be about right.
Yeah.
Everyone's rushing to get their extensions and patios put down because of the availability of, you know, it's kept the cost of labour down in for building.
One of our listeners, John, says that Brexit was all about immigration and that the Brits were actually sick of the migration story.
Look, I think, I'll let these guys comment, but I think it's also a fact, you know, there's always someone that has a story about someone who's come over from Europe and, you know, is getting a huge government handout and blah, blah, blah. Well, reality is somewhat different. Yes, it has enabled a lot of cheaper labour to come from some of the old Eastern Bloc states. But that also has a benefit for the economy as well. It also means Brits could freely go and work in Europe. So if you had skills that were marketable, you weren't just locked up, you know, to the United Kingdom. You could go into Europe. But immigration has been a big question, hasn't it? It's been a big topic.
That's been central to the argument, definitely, and, you know, people's concerns about losing British identity because of immigration. But I actually think that's piffle. The UK has always been an internationalist country, an outwardly focused country, and we've often...
Well, your royal family, they're all Germans. Germans and Greeks, aren't they, Tess?
And it's true that there was a whole bunch of fake news. So immigration was made the centrepiece, topic of conversation. There's relatively... little that's probably going to change in terms of the overall numbers of immigration, and that workforce was propping up the bottom end of the economy, and if that dries up again, it'll be another squeeze on labour costs.
We'll have to bring some Aussies back over to do the hard work instead.
Now, just before we go, Tass, there's a message there from a listener, I think.
Quite a substantial message.
I'd like you to read it out.
I'm not going to read it out because it's too long to read, but
no,
essentially...
Go on, read it out.
Wow. I thought long and hard about texting, so here I go. I'm a primary teacher, and I see that I'm involved in the Safe Schools program at primary school level in the capacity of modelling inclusion and acceptance with my students. And I teach the whole school and have taught young people who have identified as trans, gay, lesbian, bi and pansexual to a degree within my care and beyond. He says, they say, I demand inclusive language in my classroom and will shut down anything which in any way is not supportive or constructive. But my issue is with another area on which James Molino did not touch but can have a direct contribution to bullying and disengagement and potentially welfare and crime. We identify many struggling students as early as prep who pass assessment with one or more point that the test allows and therefore receive no funding and no individual support. I write this because one such past student of mine in his middle years of school will become a father of twins this year. The poverty cycle will not have broken, and this young man, whose parents have also played a part, has not been given a choice other than to become a behaviour problem, a bully, and now, way too early, a father. So congratulations to whoever holds a portfolio for education, because until whichever government is in power and prioritise investment in education, for all of our students, nothing will change.
Well, that's an interesting perspective.
It's actually a very good perspective. It's saying let's deal with the core issues.
So thank you for sharing that with us.
11782.
Yeah.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.